Hi, this is Erin from Fit Bottomed Girls.
Hi, this is Fit Bottomed Girl Jen.
Hi, this is Fit Bottomed Girl Kristen.
Hi, this is Fit Bottomed Girl Margot.
You are listening to the podcast that will not only help you to keep a lid on the junk in the trunk, but will also help inspire you to live a happy, healthier life full of confidence.
Each episode, we talk about current events and our favorite articles from the sites. Plus, we chat with experts in food, health, nutrition, meditation, fitness, and more. If you've been looking for that one podcast that will make you laugh as you learn more about yourself, well, then welcome to the Fit Bottomed Girls podcast.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Fit Bottomed Girls podcast. This is Margot. I'm Fit Bottomed Girl Margot. And on the line, I have Jennifer.
Hello.
And I have Kristen.
Yo.
Yo. So this episode is really fun. Kristen and I talked to Frances Largeman Roth, and she's a nutritionist, and she has her own channel on YouTube, and you're going to hear her interview soon, and she's just amazing. And I think I mentioned this in the interview, but Frances actually used to take my spin class every Sunday morning at 8:30. And even when she was pregnant, you know, she is just such a dynamo, and she's so interesting. It was such a great talk. We talked all about all kinds of things. So Woody, I wanted to talk to you guys about like what we're going to discuss today. What do you think were the worst diet fads that you ever fell for in your life? Because we talked about diet fads with her, with Frances. So Jen, what was the worst diet fad you fell for?
Oh man. There are a few, but the most notable one, these are obviously in pre-FBG days that led to the creation of FBG. I would say the most notable one would be I did it, but it was kind of also a test. In graduate school, I was at the University of Minnesota, and for my capstone project, I did a series of writings where I kind of put myself through the ringer. I was like, okay, I'm going to do a low-carb diet, because at that time, low-carb diets, Atkins, was like all the craze. So like, I'm going to do that, but not from like a weight loss perspective. I'm going to do it from a fitness perspective. I'm going to do it from a workout perspective. Can you do Atkins, and can you work out? And so I did it. I did for 2 weeks. I mean, I had like 40 or fewer grams of carbohydrates a day. And then with it, I was still trying to teach group exercise. I was still trying to run. And it was brutal, and it was stupid. I mean, it was so stupid. I mean, here I was like in my, you know, early 20s in graduate school, should have a ton of energy, and was literally like, I remember at the University of Minnesota at the rec center at the time, you had to walk up 2 flights of stairs to where I was teaching group X. And so I would get to the top and I would be like completely spent. And I had packed and this is maybe when I was just like 5 or 6 days into it. And I was having like tons of cravings for carbs and was just kind of like miserable. But I remember I had packed a pear in my bag that was kind of like a, you know, break in case of emergency situation. So I remember that like that 5th or 6th day in when I got to the top of those stairs and had to teach, I was like, there's no way I can teach a class. Like I physically not, like my heart rate was elevated. I was out of breath. I was lethargic. I felt heavy all over. It's like, this is the opposite of how you should feel when you're trying to be healthy. And so I ate like half the pear in order to get
the whole half the pear, Jen, the whole half the pear,
a pear. You know what I mean?
Jesus.
And so I could teach the class. And so after that, I kept up with just to kind of so that I could fully write the piece with what my experiences was, and I journaled it every day. But it was terrible, and I ate a ton of meat and cheese. At the end of it, I think I might have gained or I might have lost like 2 or 3 pounds or something. And nothing really happened. My workouts were terrible. I was miserable, and then afterwards, I binged on carbs like a crazy person. So, you know, when we talk about diets don't work, this is an extreme example of an experience of diets do not work. You know, and I think afterwards, gosh, I could talk about this forever, but I feel like afterwards I came out from it. Like, yeah, I did it as an experiment for, you know, school, but I think I also did it because I kind of wanted to lose weight. I wanted to see if it worked. And then when it didn't work, I still didn't blame the diet, but I still also kind of thought like, well, I didn't fully do it correct because I had half a pear, you know, and then like a couple days
later, that
like
pear.
So I still felt shitty about myself when I was done with it, even though I knew the diet sucked. So like one of, that's one of the key experiences that I had that really later on, once I kind of got a handle of like some of the yo-yo dieting and emotional eating and different kind of stuff that led to the creation of Fit Bottom Girls, to be like, you don't need to diet to be healthy. In fact, it's the complete opposite of what you need to do. But it really was the kind of that deep-seated thing that was like, now I know that diet suck, but at the time I thought I kind of sucked. So inside of my soul. There you go.
I think a lot of us can relate to that. What about you, Kristen?
Well, I was born in 1980. So I was like fully in the, you know, in my formative years for the low fat craze. And so, I mean, I don't even know for how many years I just would look at how much fat something had. And if it didn't have any fat, then it was basically a health food. And, you know, and I was like athletic all through high school and, you know, doing all that, but it was always like, oh, well, yeah, I can eat a whole package of gummy bears. There's no fat in them. Or, ooh, look at these potato chips. I mean, yeah, they might cause anal linkage, but there's no fat in them. So it's great. And for the record, I did not experience anal leakage. I think that's important to put out there.
Good to know.
Yeah, there you go. Jen bears her soul. I get you personal as well.
Sure. Well, we are the bottom girls, so, you know.
Yeah, we are.
That's right. But yeah, I think that was like, you know, and it wasn't like I did any really specific, like, I'm going to do 2 weeks of, you know, no fat or anything. It was just like my life for so long when I was battling all sorts of body image issues and, you know, and I thought, oh, well, this is clearly the solution. And yeah, I mean, guys, fat does not equal fat. Like, there are good mm-hmm. fats and you have to eat them. And then you feel good and you feel full, because I think I was hungry for like 10 freaking years.
Oh my gosh. Mm-hmm. I think that's like the root of the majority of emotional eating for like a large number of people. It's just like, you think it's all like emotional, but you're actually just starving because you need to eat fat.
Yeah.
Right.
Because we didn't eat fat for like 20 years.
Right. No. Okay. So do you guys remember Susan Powder?
Yeah.
The blonde woman. She had that infomercial. Remember that? She lost all that weight and she divorced the husband and she had all that stuff. And I remember this clearly. She would say, it's fat. I'm fat. It's fat. I'm fat. Like, she was talking about the food that she ate and she blamed the fat. And all of a sudden, all those fat-free cookies came out and pastries, snack wells, all. And that stuff is just sugar and garbage.
Yeah.
Like, you could eat the package and would be better for you than those snack bars. Yeah.
It's just crazy, like, how much different nutrition is than what it was when we grew up. And it continues to evolve and change and, you know.
Oh, sure. I mean, but I should make sure to add fats into my diet every day. You know, I have guacamole on my sandwich or something just to, like, give it a little extra, because you don't want to be starving. I mean, it does help with that, too.
And I think, like, no matter what, like, instead of, like, blankly following advice from Susan Powder or whoever it is, like, even us, like, I think you always have to use your body as a guide. And I think that's what, you know, I had trouble doing in my 20s, was I was always listening to someone else about what makes me feel good instead of just playing around with food and being like, oh, no, eating this way makes me feel good. I should eat this way. I mean, we're all similar, but we're all a little bit different. So you kind of have to find your jam as to what gives you energy.
And I think you're right. It is about feeling good. I think it's more than just feeling skinny. I mean, it's fine if you're thin, but you feel terrible about yourself, or you have no energy. What is the point? You can't focus. You can't, you know, engage in your friendships and your relationships and stuff like that. You're just kind of laying around because you're tired. Right. You don't go out to eat or do anything with friends because, God forbid, you eat, you know, you taste anything that's not on your schedule for the day. I mean, those people are just, I mean, it's just not healthy.
It's sad. It's not a life well lived. You know, you're not going to look back on all your days and be like, well, sure, glad I could fit in those shorts. I didn't do anything but stay at home. You know, I mean.
Or all you did was just go to the gym, but you didn't take any classes with friends. Yeah.
I should have eaten a cake and gone to SoulCycle. You know, I should have taken that class with Margot. Oh my gosh, what was I thinking? You know?
What were you thinking? Yeah, no, totally. And I think we've all been there. You're just like, oh, I don't know. I'm trying to fit into this dress for the wedding or something like that. But yeah, it's like
balance of goals and like living. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you think, how do you think like social media affects that now? Do you think it's, I mean, I don't know if I could dealt with social media when I was in my 20s and so harsh on myself about everything,
yeah.
you know, how I looked and stuff like that. I mean, I wonder, like, do you guys think it's how different it is on self-perception now with social media?
I think there's more pressure. I mean, I think we had a lot of pressure growing up, but I think there's more pressure. And I think we'll, you know, we'll kind of see from, like, the next generations coming up, like, just how pervasive that is. Mm-hmm. That's what I think is just really important. I think, you know, you can look at social media in two ways. You can look at social media as being, you know, negative for promoting like FITSPO and really kind of unrealistic images of fitness or beauty or thinness. But then, you know, there's also, you know, there's things that we do and there's things that lots of other people do that are so empowering and so encouraging. So that's why I think it's just really important. I always say like vote with your eyeballs because, mm-hmm. you know, what you give your attention to has power. So give your attention to the kind of things that are uplifting, you know, and are encouraging positive body image. So I think there is more pressure, but I think there's also a lot of really awesome stuff there. But you have to consciously decide to focus on the good stuff you want to see. And then even if you think some of this other stuff you're seeing that is more like more negative or unrealistic body image, it's more pressure. Even if you think that you can kind of like brush that aside and think it's not affecting you, study after study shows that it does affect you. So, you know, really focus on, I say positive body image stuff. And if you've got little girls at home, like pay attention to what they're watching, reading, viewing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's so important.
Yeah, I feel it. What do you think, Kristen?
Well, I have like a lot of thoughts about social media and authenticity and what it means about us with what we're posting and how we are engaging with what we're seeing posted. And Jen, I mean, you hit on a lot of the same stuff that I tend to get on my soapbox about. But I think it, you know, yes, what you engage in and what you look at and what you give thought to does have power, but you also have some say in how you are taking this information in. So like, for example, if you're following me on social media, the majority of my posts, they're going to be real, but they're going to show a pretty fun life. And I have a pretty good one. Like I'm happy with it, but you know, you're going to see pictures of me going to the beach with my friends and videos of me dancing with my tennis partner when we finally score a point and wear tutus. And you know, you're going to see me cheersing with champagne and you know, like these are all fun things. Well, and I did actually post yesterday about the fact that I was more excited about my tater tots that I was making than the Brussels sprouts, although both were equally delicious and the Brussels sprouts was what I finished. I saved some
good for
tots
you.
For today. Mm-hmm. But,
boom, high five.
Know, the fact, yeah, thank you. But the fact of the matter is, like, you know, none of us are wanting to post our super shitty days. Like, I have days where all I want to do is get under a fort of blankets and eat nachos. And mm-hmm. I think most of us have days like that. And I know, based on my personal history, that that's going to happen and I'm going to pull out of it. And if I'm having trouble pulling out of it, I'm going to find help. And I know I'm getting into a whole different thing here, but the thing is we all have the personal responsibility to know that what we're seeing online posted by anybody is not a complete and totally accurate representation of their entire life. Because why am I going to post a picture of myself under blankets eating nachos? I don't want to see that. I don't want
to
remind her of that.
I
want
to see that, to be honest with you.
Well, and that's the thing is I might share that with my friends, but it's,
right,
you know,
right.
It's not
I
something
get,
I'm proud of. It's not something that makes me feel good. You know, I'm not going to share necessarily a picture of like my sick dog or, you know, anything like that. And it doesn't mean, you know, it doesn't mean that those things aren't happening. And it doesn't mean that, you know, in addition to the really beautiful salad we're eating that maybe we don't eat, you know, two handfuls of chocolate chips somewhere. And I think it just becomes really tricky. Like, what's your responsibility in terms of being totally authentic? I don't think you have to share everything. I think it's great to share the things that make you feel good about sharing. Mm-hmm. But we've got to remember as we're looking at it, like, it's not the whole story. You're never going to get the whole story unless it's your story.
Yep.
And
how many times have you got, oh, I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, I'm going to step off my soapbox now, but.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's.
We can have a whole other podcast discussion about that in it.
Oh, we definitely need to. Yeah, I can't tell you guys like how many times every couple of years I'll read a blog post from somebody that, by the way, I probably never even followed, but they give this long, long, long explanation why they're no longer blogging or posting on social media. And it's usually a woman and it's usually because she's going through a divorce. that she posted a life that she projected as totally perfect, and kids perfect, and marriage perfect, and the house was perfect, and it was a lie. And when you're constantly projecting a lie, it's going to catch up with you. You know, you're going to feel phony. You're going to feel, and you're going to feel that responsibility for sending out phoniness.
Yeah, I think it's hard. And I think that's where, you know, I think at Footbottom Girls, we're all a little bit different because we share insights of like our life, like here and there. Mm-hmm. But like, you know, the mission of Footbottom Girls is what Footbottom Girls is. And there's a lot of women and even men and voices that go into that mission. So, you know, we don't always have to feel like we have to tell like every single thing that's going on, but we can kind of share mm-hmm. what we want. And I think we all individually decide to share the things that we think are ultimately going to help support people or uplift people. You know, mm-hmm. so sharing past experiences with yo-yo dieting, or I talked about infertility struggles on Fit Bottom Mamas that my husband and I had. You know, mm-hmm. that's not something like every day I'm not going to like Snapchat like, oh, here's a negative, you know, pregnancy test. I later cried.
Right, right.
You know what I mean? But here it is in context of how I'm feeling and supporting like more thought of, you know, and more tips and kind of like, you know, transforming that conversation a little bit. And I think that's where blogging has power. But, you know, I think we're kind of a unique animal here at Fit Bottom Girls. Like,
yeah,
we want to be authentic, but also uplifting to everyone all the time. So just, I don't know. Common experiences is the number one thing. Authentic common experiences.
Well, I think that makes me think back to our conversation from our first episode with Bex.
Yeah.
Like she says, sometimes you're going to be in a funk.
Yeah.
And sometimes that funk will teach you something. And she says sometimes she just stayed away from social media, didn't really disclose everything. And then later on when she had some context for it, would present it in a way that made her feel comfortable. So she wasn't lying or hiding anything, but she was just choosing when to send out the information. And that's like, it's a healthier way to handle it.
Yeah. And it's also totally important, you know, to Kristen's point too, is it's just, you don't want to get on social media and just like emote all over the place. You know what I mean? Like
those people are exhausting.
Oh my gosh,
yeah.
You know, so I, you know, doing the self-reflection and coming to a point and being like, okay, here's my experience and having a full thought around it, I think is important.
I totally agree with you. And I said this is on one of my lists of what I want to talk about today, is that I get really tired of that meme that put up that I am so personally sick of that. I'm so glad I missed that workout session, said no one ever. I'm like, duh, I've regretted workouts. I've done things like I should have gone out and had fun. Or there was one time I went on a bike ride out to Far Rockaway and it was on a hot day like it is today, and I didn't bring enough water, and I really pushed myself a little too hard to get water, you know, to replenish. And I was sick for 2 days with dehydration. I don't know if you guys have ever been dehydrated.
Oof,
it's not terrible. Fun. It's the worst.
Yeah.
So that's a workout I regretted. I think that's that pressure like, oh, it's always great and it's always fun and it's like, no, sometimes, you know.
And I have to say, we may be guilty of putting that meme up at one time or another.
Yeah.
I mean, I do.
Well, we're going to stop.
I do think it's empowering, and it can be really important for people that are like beginners, you know, that
right,
are like, if
right,
you're really
right.
trying to think like, should I work out or shouldn't I work out, you know, or gosh, should I do like right. my third week out this week? But for people, you know, like us that do work out regularly, or if you're more of the yo-yo exerciser, you know, where you're like, I'm going to be perfect, 100%, I'm going to work out every day this week, and then you don't work out for a month. Yeah, clearly mm-hmm. sure you have workouts you regret. I mean, I know I had, I ran a marathon in 2010. I had marathon training runs that I look back on and I'm like, that was stupid. You know, I was really so focused on like getting my miles in or hitting my training plan that I overtrained. You know, I got injured. My marathon was fun. I'm glad I did it, but it was painful. I mean, I had like a glute hip situation injury that happened that I was in pain for 20 miles of the 26, you know? And that's due to overtraining before, you know, just doing too much and not listening to my body. And I think that's what it all comes back to, is like, listen to your body. If your mind's telling you you don't want to do a workout, that's one thing. But if your body is telling you you don't need to do
right.
a workout, that's another. And that's where I think the difference is. And I know I've also been like, oh my gosh, I'm not going to be able to work out for like 4 days because of travel. I want to get a workout in before I go, even though maybe I kind of feel like I'm coming down with something. And then I mm-hmm. slip in the gym, and then I come down with the something. Like, I don't know how many times I have to learn that lesson, but, but
yeah,
I'm like,
yeah, business travel is hard.
Yeah, I want to get my workout in, you know? I want to do it all. Sometimes you can't do it all.
No. And you know what? I just call it a rest day. You know what? This is my recovery rest day. I'm just going to take it, you know, and this day I didn't plan to, but that's what's going to happen. That's the way I think anyway.
Yeah. Yep. Play for the long game. You know what I mean? Like, it's not about this day. It's not about this week. It's really about like months and years and the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. You know, if you get injured, you're out for a long time. So think the long game. Think long game.
Well, I think we should wrap it up on that point. Everybody, so please, if you like what you hear, please subscribe. We're on Google Play, Stitcher, iTunes, SoundCloud. You also could just find us at fitbottomgirls.com/podcast. All the episodes are going to be there. And next up, we have Frances Largeman Roth, our nutritionist from Brooklyn. She's awesome. This is an amazing conversation that Kristen and I had with her. And thank you guys so much. Bye. Hello, it's the Fit Bottom Girls podcast, and today our interview is with Frances Largeman Roth. She's a registered dietitian. She's the author of Eating in Color and Feed the Belly. She's host of the Milk and Honey Kitchen with Frances, which is on YouTube. She's a busy mom, and she took time out of her schedule to talk to us today. So hi, Frances. Introduce yourself to the folks.
Hi, guys. I am thrilled to be here. Podcasting seems to be, you know, the way to be in the media now. And so I'm very, very thrilled to be chatting with you guys today.
Yeah, we're thrilled to have you.
You got that all right, Margo. I am a busy mom and I do a million different things and I kind of cobble it all together. And that's kind of is the way that people work these days, right? Especially moms, you know, you do a little bit of this and a little bit of that. And I'm happy to chat about it all.
Today, my co-host is Kristen Seymour, and Kristen is dying to get the first question out to you. So, Kristen, go for it.
That I am. So, what I need to know to start with is, what got you interested in food and nutrition? Is that something that, like, from a young age, you were always experimenting with, or is that something that's, you know, a little more recent?
Well, no, I was not interested in it from a young age. I actually wanted to be a veterinarian from the age of 3 or 4 on.
Wow.
And I actually did go, I did go to college for animal science. I did 4 years of animal science. But, you know, in high school, I did start becoming, you know, kind of dipping my toe in the water. I worked at a health food store called Healthy Alternatives in my very small town of Salamanca, New York. Unfortunately, later on, that store turned into a tobacco shop, but it did help to kind of, you know, turn on my interest in nutrition. And then what really did it was, I did this four years of animal science, but I was learning how to build the bigger, better cow, a bigger, better sheep, get more meat on that animal faster. And something about that just did not sit well with me, but I really did like my animal nutrition courses. And, you know, finally I kind of thought about it for a while and I said, you know what? This is years ago now, but I said, I bet you in about 10 years, people are going to be more interested in what they're eating. And I think that there's going to be more of a need for nutritionists. So all I had to do was basically stay another year at Cornell and do the nutrition stuff because I had already done the sciences. And that was the beginning of the story.
That is so amazing. How long have you been a nutritionist now? An RDM.
Oh gosh, over 15 years now, over 15 years. And you know, another big part of it was that my dad died when I was 12 and he had type 2 diabetes, high blood pressure, and he was also overweight. And what I started learning through my nutrition classes was that he didn't have to die. You know, he was 62. He did not have to die at such a young age. And, you know, a lot of these health diseases that we're confronted with right now as a country, they're preventable. And yeah. if you do the right thing, which is why, you know, it's so important to start with kids, if you start doing the right thing and build in these healthy habits, exercise, healthy eating, stress reduction, you can lead a long, healthy life. You do not have to be hit with these illnesses.
One of my favorite books of yours, and I keep it in my apartment and I have it all tagged with my favorite recipes, is called Eating in Color. Mm-hmm. And can you describe the process of like how you were able to get bring this book into fruition? How did it get started with it?
Sure. Well, I was wrapping up my career at Health Magazine. I had been there for 8 years as the food and nutrition director. It was such a great learning experience, but I was ready to do my own thing. And that was really the first thing that I did when I became a freelancer and started my own company, was to start working on eating in color. And really what led me to write the book was because my oldest kid, Willa, who's now 7, as a toddler, she started becoming a very bland, boring eater. It was just, you know, chicken breast and cheese and bread, everything was beige. And that did not feel good for me as a nutritionist and as a mom. And I thought, okay, so how am I going to get this kid to eat more fruits and vegetables? And what I realized is that, you know, really with anyone, but especially with kids, they don't care about a health message, you know? They don't really Right. care that broccoli is going to make them big and strong. What they do care about is having fun with their food, and sometimes a little friendly competition also helps. So, you know, when I started to talk to her about, hey, Willa, look at your plate and look at your brother's plate, he's got more color on his plate. Let's see what we can do about yours. Then she got it. And so she's still a little on the picky side, but they get that, that, you know, colorful fruits and veggies are fun. And yeah, you know, they're also really healthy. So that was my way of trying to get that message across of, oh my gosh, yes, all this stuff is healthy for you, but look how beautiful it is. And look at all the fun stuff you can do with it.
I love it.
Thank you.
We already know that you are an awesome exercise person since you go to Margot's classes. Wanted to know, what are some of your favorite pre and post workout snacks?
Oh, well, I am a big yogurt person. And, you know, part of the reason is because it is so rich in protein, also very rich in calcium, but also it's super versatile, right? So you can do a smoothie bowl. You can do just, you know, a super quick throw some almonds on top and some fruit. Obviously, in this Instagram age, anything that's pretty and that you can do colorful things with is a great thing. So, you know, bowl of yogurt with a little bit of fruit and nuts on top, that's a wonderful way to start your day. Also, in the wintertime, I do love steel-cut oats, you know, and again, I usually throw some berries on top because the berries are so rich in antioxidants, and most of us do not get enough fruits and veggies each day. So anyway, any place that you can kind of sneak in a half cup here, half cup there is a great thing. And then sometimes, honestly, this morning it was cinnamon raisin toast with peanut butter on top. I try to change it up because also variety is key for getting in a great selection of nutrients.
What do you eat afterwards? Are you ever like really hungry after a tougher workout?
Yes, yes. So that is where, so pre-exercise, you want to be a little bit more careful. You want to eat things that you know are going to be fine with your stomach. You never want to get out there and cramp up or, you know, have indigestion. But afterwards, you can be a little bit more creative. So that's where I might do a fried egg on a piece of toast with a little sriracha on top, maybe over kale, something like that. So you want to get in and you really do want something that's quick, because ideally you're going to be eating within 15 to 30 minutes after you've finished your workout. That's where you're going to have the biggest gains in replenishing your glycogen stores, as well as repairing those micro tears that happen to the muscles.
And tell us about your YouTube channel.
So the Milk and Honey Kitchen with Frances, that is shot in my Brooklyn kitchen, which is not a very pretty kitchen. And it's been really fun. It's been a great learning experience for me because I am used to shooting videos that are very professionally done, you know, professional lighting in a studio kitchen. Everything's immaculate. There's usually someone actually preparing all the food for me, and I just have to kind of make it look pretty. So this was totally different. This was waking up at the crack of dawn, prepping all the food, doing all the food styling, all the prop styling, doing my hair and makeup, you know, just a totally DIY experience other than the video. I wasn't filming the video. Some people can do, I don't know how they do all of that and then the video on top of that. But right. It's a way for me to, in a more sort of casual way, share my recipes and share the nutrition tips as well as the kitchen tips that I've learned throughout the years.
Now, I'm sure you've touched on this within your videos, but what would be your top piece of advice for busy working parents like you who want to feed their family in a healthy way, but without putting in hours of prep?
The first thing that I would say is, out of a week, not every day is going to be perfect, right? There's going to be a day in there where you got home late, your partner got home late, there's homework to do or some other project to do, and it's going to be a pizza night. You know, there's just yep. no way around that. But maybe that's a make your own pizza. Like the other night we made these mini pizzas, which the kids loved because they could put the toppings on themselves. And I bought naan, you know, actually it was mini naan. So there were four in a package, which was perfect because there were four of us here. And I had, turkey pepperoni in the fridge and organic shredded mozzarella and some cherry tomatoes and olives. And it was a 5-minute dinner. So it's being prepared, right? It's having the good stuff on hand that can quickly come together to make a dinner, and then pick a day when you have a little bit extra time. Maybe that's a Sunday or maybe that's another day for you, and then do some chopping. Because for example, if you're going to cut up a large watermelon, that's going to take some time.
Yes. Right.
And it does get a little messy. So, you know, I did that yesterday. And so now I have all this beautiful diced, or cubed watermelon ready to go for my kids' lunches at camp and, you know, or snacks at night. So it's a little planning. It's a little time, and it's a little bit of kind of going with the flow, but also trying to not be a short order cook. So, you know, I still have picky Willa, who doesn't really like to eat meat, you know, only maybe certain things she'll eat. And then I have Leo, who's a big time carnivore like his dad. And then I have Phoebe, who will at this age will still eat anything, but she will get to the point, I'm sure, where she's going to start, you know, turning things down. So it's, you know, that's why I think flexitarian meals are great, things that you can put together with or without meat, like quesadillas or, you know, pizzas or salads where you've got multiple ingredients going in. And also if the kids have a little bit of control where they can say, yeah, I want to add that, you know, even, you know, physically doing it themselves. Taco night is a great example of that. Keeping it fun and colorful.
I always have this question with nutritionists because I have these favorite foods I eat almost every single day. And I wonder if it's bad for me or not, but are there any foods you like to eat every single day, or do you think that's a bad idea?
Well, you know, people ask me this question a lot because.
Oh, good. Okay.
Especially busy working women, you know,
right.
who are fitting in workouts and, you know, just maybe there's not a lot of time for food prep. And they do kind of settle on like these 10 things that they eat. The only thing that's bad about that, and I kind of hit on this a little bit earlier, is that you really do want to get, this is for health, for total health. This isn't for weight loss or anything like that. You really want to get a variety of nutrients in your diet, right? So if the only green that you eat is kale, of course kale is good for you, but that provides a certain set of nutrients, right? So if you were having if you were also putting in some butterhead lettuce or romaine or spinach, that would be better because you're getting more variety. Same thing, you know, if you were only eating almond butter every day, you know, and that was your go-to protein, I would say, no, you should have some variety in there. You know, let's have some other nut butters in there too. So it's working though within obviously the diet that you want to follow, you know, whether you're vegan, paleo, vegetarian, whatever it is, but variety is key.
Now, are there any current food trends that you see that really make you happy and think, oh yes, we're on to something? Or on the other side, are there any that you see a lot of that are driving you just nuts?
Well, gosh, both. Yeah. I mean, I'm very heartened by the fact, you know, because I see this all the time on Instagram, that people have gotten this color message, right? I'm not saying that they got it from me, but they've gotten the message somehow, and they're making these really beautiful creations, you know, smoothie bowls and all kinds of bowls overflowing with things. So that's been great to see. But at the same time, it's always like two ends of a spectrum, right? So at the same time as you see all this wonderful produce happening, you also see things like rainbow bagels, right? So and confetti cakes, and there's all this obsession with like sprinkles. And so it leaves me sometimes scratching my head going, what? Yeah. You know, so healthy, but yet so not healthy. Or, you know, donuts. There's a big donut trend as well. So I don't know. I mean, I think that the pendulum always swings back and forth. I see, you know, there's now, I think there's going to be a pasta resurgence or, you know, revival. And anytime that people like, you know, I think the country as a whole basically cut pasta out of their diets. So I think we're going to see that come back, but maybe in a different way, a healthier way. And there's also a big trend right now in freshly milled grains. So freshly milled grains to make fresh bread. And so I think that that's an awesome trend. And I think that it's going to help to counteract this huge gluten-free trend that we've been seeing for the past at least 5 years, because bread is not something that bread is not the devil, right? It's just right. That we have to learn how to eat it in a way that is closer to, you know, the original intent of bread, you know? So it's not white Wonder Bread that is completely stripped of all nutrients. It's made with whole grains and it's nutrient packed. So I love watching food trends because it is truly fascinating. You know, there are a lot of innovations out there. Sometimes innovations are wonderful and sometimes they kind of lead you back to square one. So always fun to watch.
So I have a question. So what is the most common nutrition mistake you think people make?
Cutting out whole food groups, you know, which is what we were just talking about, where people say, you know what, I'm really confused about carbs, so I'm just going to not eat carbs, which ends up kind of being impossible to do anyway, right? Because if you're eating any fruits or vegetables, you are eating carbohydrates. And so people will they'll get super confused because there's so much misinformation out there. And, you know, you can go on the internet and look up bananas bad and get, you know, thousands of articles telling you why bananas are bad, or bananas good and another 1,000 articles saying how good bananas are for you. So I think that, just kind of blanketly saying I'm not doing this anymore is always bad in the end. And I think that, you know, some of these new diets like paleo can be good because they can get you to try new things, you know, things that you hadn't eaten before. But for example, with the gluten-free diet, it leads a lot of people to eat just a lot of packaged and processed gluten-free food. And, you know, not everybody has to be on a gluten-free diet. So yes, so, you know, ruling out whole food groups is a mistake, and also just being too strict, right? You know, just, I've talked to a lot of young women who are sort of in the nutrition, fitness, media industry, and they've confided in me that they think they've maybe taken their healthy eating a little too far. You know, because, once you start saying, I'm not doing this and I'm not having this, and they keep kind of cutting away a little bit of the puzzle until there's almost nothing left. And that can ultimately lead to nutrition deficiencies and eating disorders as well.
For sure.
Absolutely. What is it called? Orthorexia? Yeah, it's a growing problem, especially with social media. You know, people sharing pictures of themselves 24/7. You know, you almost feel like you can't have any kind of weight fluctuation or anything like that. It's like it's a little scary.
It is a little scary. And what's interesting is that, you know, obviously what you show on social media is up to you. So you're editing it, right? And you're putting, you know, people may be eating a bunch of other stuff that's not healthy, right? But they're only showing their followers the super healthy stuff, all the green drinks and the salads and smoothies and stuff like that. So it's also a very false, it can be a very false image what people are seeing. And I had a client who said that she, you know, and she's definitely from the younger generation where, you know, she grew up on social media. She was very, very influenced by what people were posting. And it was basically making her limit her own choices. So it can be a very dangerous thing.
Well, this was really so fascinating. I could talk to you for like an hour. You're so smart and you're so wise, but we have one more question to ask you and then I'll have you give your call outs. And this is going to be something we ask all of our guests. What was the last song you heard before you did this podcast?
Oh my goodness. Wow. That is, I am sure that it was probably a Kidz Bop Kids song. So probably a clean version of a Justin Bieber song.
Awesome.
That's great. So can you tell everybody where they can find you on, we just talked about social media, where can everybody find and reach out to you?
Absolutely. So for Instagram and Twitter, I am Frances L. Roth. And then my website is franceslargemanroth.com, no hyphen. And then on YouTube, it's the Milk and Honey Kitchen with Frances.
Thank you so much for coming by. Kristen and I totally appreciate this.
Oh, this was awesome. Thank you guys. And I can't wait to hear it.
All right. So thank you, Frances.
Thanks, Margot. Bye.
Bye.
Bye, Kristen.
That's it for this episode of the Fit Bottom Girls podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in. And if you like what you're hearing, feel free to subscribe to us on whatever platform you use to listen to podcasts. And if you love what you're hearing, yay, leave a few stars and a review. That would be amazing. Be sure to follow us on all of our social media channels for Fit Bottom Girls, Fit Bottom Zen, Fit Bottom Eats, and Fit Bottom Mamas. You just spell it all out and you will find us. Facebook, Twitter, Snapchat, Pinterest, Instagram. Believe me, you will find us. If you want to reach out to say hi, have a question about a recent episode or interview, feel free to email us at podcast@fitbottomgirls.com. And if books and movies are also your thing, check out the other podcast I co-host called Book vs. Movie, which you can find anywhere where you search for podcasts. Thank you so much once again for dropping by. And remember, a life filled with laughter is a life well lived. Bye.